ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Welcome to Pushyabhishek. I am very grateful to all those who have come tonight. Besides those who are in this temple room, there are about four times more people, at least, on the rooftops and the terraces and the front courtyards and the garden, all watching on monitor TV and listening. Krishna tells in Bhagavad Gita, Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhakta prayachit. That love cannot be limited by any material consideration. Nitya siddha Krishna prema sajja kabunoi sravanadi sudhichiti kori yayudoi. That prema, or love for God, is dormant within the heart of every living being. It is the very essence of who we are. But due to the covering of Maya, or the illusory potency, like a cloud covers the sun, the ahankar, the false ego, eclipses our own vision from who we really are. And what is our real happiness? And we try to find a replacement for that forgotten love through unlimited pursuits within this world. What is the nature of that love? Krishna explains, if one offers me even a leaf, a little water, some fruit, or a flower, if it is offered with devotion, I accept it. Whether one is a billionaire, or whether one is living in the forest with nothing but a loincloth, whether one is in a city, or a village, man, woman, black, white, red, or yellow, educated or uneducated. These are all material considerations. The nature of the soul is to love God. And in loving God, every living being is included. Mamaivamso jivaloke jivabhuta sanatana. Krishna tells in Bhagavad Gita, every living being is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. Vidyavanaya sampane brahmani gavihastini sunichaiva supake cha pandita samadarshana. The nature of one who has awakened that prema, that bhakti of the heart, is that it extends to everyone. Whether one is a learned priest, or whether one is an elephant, or a cow, or a dog, or an insect, even a cockroach or a rat in Bombay. Wherever there's life, there's a presence of a spirit, the Atma. And because that Atma is a part of God, you cannot love God and not love every living being. And when that love is extended to the people or the creatures of this world, it manifests as compassion. The first principle of every great spiritual system is to love God, and everything is included. And that is the test of our love for God, that there is no envy toward anyone. There is compassion. There is the path of bhakti is very fascinating in that the end result is identical to the process of attaining that result. The end result is unmotivated love for Krishna. And what is the process? Offering our love to Krishna. Through the process, we become purified. And one of the ways that the greatest acharyas and even the most ancient scriptures has recommended is offering devotion to the Archavigraha, or the deity form of the Lord in the temple. In fact, traditionally in India, every home had a deity, either a Shalagram Shila or a Murti. And that deity was the center of the home. The husband, the wife, the children, they all recognize this is our priority. This is the proprietor. This is the enjoyer. And we are meant to be united in that, in his service. Sometimes, due to various conceptions, for various valid reasons, people consider the worship of the form of the Lord in the temple, the deity, to be superstition or idol worship. Idol worship is when it's without the proper philosophy and without the proper devotion. Then it is idol worship. Some people consider it sentimental. But if we consider history, we find something very much different. The greatest scholars who have written volumes and volumes of the deepest, most philosophical books, the history of man in India, they all worshipped the deity form of the Lord. Sripad Shankaracharya worshipped Badri Vishal in Badrinath. Some of the most compassionate, most influential spiritual leaders whose life were just impeccable offerings of mercy and love, they worshipped the form of the Lord. In South India, we have Ramanujacharya, the greatest, most beautiful temples in all of India. To this day, almost 1,000 years after his appearance in this world, are still performing the services in those temples. Tens and millions of followers. And then in the western part of South India, there is Madhvacharya. Ramanujacharya worshipped Ranganath and Balaji and Varadraj in Kanchipuram. And a little west, almost 800 years ago, was Madhvacharya. The books that he wrote, so deeply philosophical, so highly scholarly, and his compassion, his devotion, to this day attracts tens and millions of followers. He centered his life and all of his followers around the deity form of Udupi Krishna. Ballabhacharya, who has so many millions of followers, even today, almost 500 years after he left this world, he and all of his followers worship Srinathji, the Murti and Nathwar. And Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is incarnation predicted in the scriptures, 44,500 years before his appearance in Puri, every day, he and his followers worshipped Lord Jagannath. So this form of worship has been since time immemorial. The question is, why? If God is within our heart, and God is within everyone else's heart, and God is within, factually, his energy, his material nature, why don't we just see him everywhere? Why come to the temple to worship in this way? The great acharyas have taught us. Acharya means the very highly elevated spiritual teachers, self-realized souls. Because it unites us. It unites communities. Unites civilization. To gather together to make our offerings of love to the Lord. In a very, very personal way. The Bhagavatam explains, Brahmiti Paramatmiti Bhagavan Iti Shabjyate. There is three primary aspects of the Absolute Truth. The all-pervading, impersonal light, which is Brahman. The Paramatma, the Lord who is seated as the witness within every living being's heart. And Bhagavan, the Lord who is the supreme, all-attractive person. Through worshiping Brahman, we achieve liberation from all suffering. Through worshiping the Paramatma, we achieve inner light, knowledge, mystic powers. And through worshiping Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead, we awaken prema, or eternal loving relationship with the Lord. So to cultivate that experience in us, the Lord is so kind that Radha and Krishna, they facilitate loving exchanges. We can offer food to the Lord. In bhakti, this is a very deep, profound meditation. When we're buying the food, when we're cutting it, when we're cooking it, when we're offering it, it's all a concentrated meditation. This is for the pleasure of the Lord. And that food becomes so sacred because the Lord reciprocates with our devotion. Some people say, if God is everywhere, why you worship deity? The logical reply would be, if God is everywhere, then he's also in the deity. But in the deity, we can focus our complete concentration in making an offering of love. Most of us, it's hard to do that to the sky or to a cloud. We make the offering. And Krishna accepts it. He accepts our love. Because God is unlimited. And in whatever way we offer our love, the Lord can accept. Krishna explains that he is saragrahi. He is bhavagrahi. He accepts the essence of everything. He accepts our love. Srila Prabhupada wrote, Krishna does not accept the thing that you offer. He accepts the purpose the intention in which it is offered. When Krishna accepts our food, it becomes prasad. Prasad means mercy. It's purified, sanctified. And then when we eat that prasad, we become sanctified. When they do the aarti, if you're doing it for money, if you're doing it for prestige, that's all you'll get. But if you're really doing it as an offering of devotion, how the Lord will reciprocate and manifest himself and melt your heart, awaken your heart, and awaken your compassion for all living beings. There's a beautiful story we told in Pune that took place in Ambika Kalna. A great devotee named Goridas, he had nothing. He was a very simple man. He just was living under a tree, and Lord Chaitanya came to him in these deities of Gornitai. And what did he have? But one day, in the early morning when he woke up, he was thinking, I want to offer Krishna the most wonderful ornaments as a gesture of my love. But he had nothing. But when he opened the doors, he found that the deities had dressed themselves in diamonds and rubies and emeralds and sapphires, gold and silver. He was absolutely shocked. Just the way he was decorating them in his mind was manifested before his eyes. He wept. And then the deities became regular again. All the jewels went away. And the deity said, actually, what we really like is to be decorated in flowers. A single flower offered with love is more priceless than the most precious diamond in the British Museum. Which, by the way, were stolen from deities from India. The most precious diamonds in the world were stolen from the deities of India. In fact, one of our very dear friends and godbrother, Shyam Sundar Prabhu, who actually was best friend of George Harrison of the Beatles. Today he is, I just talked to him yesterday, he's dredging the Krishna River in South India looking for diamonds. I said, Shyam Sundar, you can offer a flower. Why are you going through all this trouble? Flowers more valuable than your diamonds. He said, still, this is my nature. I have to look for them. I could do so much if I find even one. That's how he's doing. That is the power of love. So this wonderful festival, it is a festival of devotion. Please don't just see with your eyes. See through your heart. Through the wisdom we receive from the holy scriptures and the great saints. It is a shower of our combined intent to please Krishna, to purify our own hearts, and ultimately to be instruments of that love in every aspect of our life. The world is in turmoil, economically, ecologically, emotionally, psychiatrically. Depression, mental illness, is the number three disease, according to the World Health Organization, that causes pain and death. Why? We have so much, but internally so little. Because the great mine of the jewels of divine love that is within our heart have been plundered by the thieves of greed, envy, anger, arrogance, passion, selfish passion, and illusion. And driven by those thieves, those enemies within us, even the pure soul creates havoc within this world. There's a great need to understand what really is of value. Character, integrity, humility, self-control, a selfless spirit of compassion to other living beings, which are all part and parcel of love for God. That is the greatest need within this world. Today, hundreds and hundreds of devotees have been plucking flower petals. It was really beautiful to see. To really appreciate, you have to know the people. There are simple taxi drivers, simple waiters in restaurants, simple people who are unemployed, living in little huts. Sitting next to multi-millionaires, industrialists with international corporations. And they're just plucking the petals. And next to them are little children. Little girl just laughing. And next to her is a PhD IIT graduate engineer. Scholars, industrialists, simple farmers, children. Anyone could do it. People from abroad. We're all united in our combined efforts to just offer this very, very simple service to the Lord. It is said that all people are created equal. On the spiritual level, we are all created equal. But as long as we think we're American or Russian or Indian or Pakistani or African or European or any of these other things, we're not equal. As long as we think we're man or we're woman, or we're young or we're old, there's no two snowflakes of all the snowflakes that have ever fallen in the sky since the beginning of time that were identical. There's no two dogs or cats or human beings that are the same. We all have our karmas, we all have our conditionings, we all have our attributes. Real equality is on the spiritual platform. In our devotion to the Lord, we are equal. It was beautiful seeing this. People of every phase of life. Throughout the world, India is condemned because of its caste system, which is a perverted conception as it is lived and understood today. On the spiritual platform, we are all servants of God. And we could be united in that love. On a real level, not just a sentimental. So we were all together picking flowers. And the result? Baskets and baskets. How many flowers? More than 1 ton. That means over 1,000 kilos, over 2,000 pounds. Flowers, all in baskets. And how beautiful, because how much does a flower petal weigh? To get 2,000 pounds of flower petals, hundreds and hundreds of people. And everyone was so happy. People go to Bollywood movies. People work so hard to get a Mercedes-Benz or a Maruti, whatever you can afford. People work so hard to get nice ornaments and good dresses. People go to the gyms to become very strong. Nothing against any of these things. But as far as happiness, none of that could compare to to plucking a flower petal. Why? Because it awakens such ecstasy in our hearts if we do it with the right intent. And we all become really brothers and sisters, united. And the culmination, there were so many people cooking. I believe there's about 4,000 people in the area, yes? So devotees, they cooked for over 1,000 in the morning. And then right after that, they cooked for another 4,000 for the evening. And go down to the kitchen. Not one of them is getting paid one paisa, which is less than a penny for those of you from abroad. But they're happy because they're doing it out of love in a spirit of service. And dozens and dozens and dozens of people cooking and stirring and frying and boiling and steaming. It's beautiful. And those who decorated, and those who are managing the crowds, everyone united, and all of you here. The culmination is we actually see all of these flower petals. As you're watching, please consider every single tiny flower petal is an offering of our united devotion. Our meditation, by offering these flower petals, we are making a prayer for the purification of our own hearts, for the awakening of the love that is dormant within us. We are praying for the blessings of the Lord on all living beings. We are praying for the happiness, the spiritual prosperity of every living being. That is the mood of the offering of each one of those petals. And there happens to be millions and millions of petals. And after we offer it, then there will be the great festival of all the Mahaprasad flower petals showered upon all of us. So I'm sure that all of you are extremely eager for me to end my once again very boring talk so that we could actually begin the festival. But let us meditate in this mood. As the devotees are showering Radha and Krishna with the petals of our devotion, the flowers of our devotion, we are together chanting the holy names. Kali Kale Namarupe Krishna Avatar. Krishna has incarnated within his names. Namachintamani Krishna's Chaitanya Rasvigraha. This means Krishna is identical with the names of Krishna. Purna, that means the full Krishna, the full Radharani is within the name. We are invoking their potencies, invoking the power of their compassion, invoking the power of their love for the welfare of all living beings. It is another type of flower shower. As we chant with devotion. In this way, through our hearts, through our prayers, through our voice, we are making these offerings of love for the pleasure of all the assembled devotees, for the pleasure of Krishna, and for the upliftment of all living beings. Gauranga Prabhu, this festival is called Pushyabhishek. Gauranga Prabhu said to me that there are a lot of people pushing. Abhishek means bathing. Pushpa means flowers. Posh means the month of January. So it's a flower shower in the month of January. But he's a manager here. He's trying to manage this play, this festival. He said there's pushing and pushing and pushing and Abhishek. But somehow or other, most of the pushing is outside and all around. But my humble request is, please do not push. Even when the shower petals come down, it should be a graceful festival. It should not be wild. It should not be a Kurukshetra mood. It's not a flower battle. We offer our love to each other with flowers. I thank you very much, and I pray that the shower of Radharani and Krishna's blessings shower upon all of you. Thank you very much.